in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today on the program, we take a look at the many faces of Iron Man. Obviously, the movie continues to do big box office, and in fact, we have an interview coming up with Matt Fraction, writer of the current Invincible Iron Man that just debuted for Marvel. Today's show will feature highlights of past interviews with some great Iron Man creators. First, we're going to talk to David Michelinie about his work on Demon in a Bottle with Bob Layton, the now classic storyline from 1979 that saw Tony Stark succumb to alcoholism. And then we finish up with Chuck Austin, who talks about his very unique series, War Machine. But let's kick things off with Dave Michelinie and his time on the Iron Man book.
You're best known, I think, for your work on Spider-Man, which we're going to get to, and Iron Man, and especially your work with Bob Layton. Demon in a Bottle, certainly one of the classic arcs. This was pre-Watchmen, and I think there was a level of storytelling going on in Iron Man that was a little more adult.
Oh, well, thanks. We didn't really make any efforts to try to be adults or anything. I think we were just writing, coming up plotting and me writing stories that we thought were interesting and taking a look at the character and saying, okay, this was a real guy in this situation, what would he be like? What would he do? What would be done to him? Which is kind of the approach I've tried to handle most superhero characters, because you've got such a basically ludicrous situation where someone with all these powers and running around in colorful suits and everything is to ground it in reality. You've always got to think about the human being who's in there. And how they're going to handle all these problems and stuff, and especially with Tony Stark. I mean, he doesn't have any powers. His power is his brain. You know, he makes who he is. He makes his hero. Spider. Mm-hmm. Peter Parker got bitten by a radioactive spider. The Fantastic Four went through radiation. Tony Stark created his hero, and he's probably the most normal and human character at Marvel. Well, it was at the time, at least. And That's such a fascinating concept. It was like an endless treasure trove of story ideas. You take a real person. So that's what we did.
Was Iron Man your first collaboration?
No, we did. Bob was actually assigned as the inker on the last couple of issues of Claw the Unconquered at DC.
Oh, okay.
And so that's how we met, and we became friends. And then when we both left for Marvel about the same time, I think I left first, and then Bob followed a few weeks later. And when Iron Man came along, the chance to do Iron Man, I'm not sure if Bob suggested me or if just, you know, because I was friends with Jim Shooter at the time, if, you know, and Bob was a friend of Jim's, and we were all together. I don't really remember, but it was a good pairing for any number of reasons. One being that Bob was a huge Iron Man fan, so everything about Iron Man he cited out. And I'd never read an Iron Man comic before in my life, so I could bring freshness to it, a new viewpoint from the one angle, and from Bob's angle, we have this grown-up fanboy who knew everything about the character. So it was a good combination. It was a good set.
What went into the thinking of let's make Tony Stark an alcoholic?
I have to say the initial idea was mine. Again, coming at it with a fresh perspective on the character. At the time when we took over the book, he was the guy, I forget the specifics, but like he had just had some kind of attempted takeover by S.H.I.E.L.D. or some such, or I think his girlfriend had left him, and he had all of these problems. And again, looking at it as a real human being with all these pressures, business pressures, personal pressures, is either going to explode or is going to seek an escape. And it just seemed natural at the time that, you know, a playboy, millionaire playboy, that was the established character. Well, playboys drink, you know, they party, they drink, that was part of the established character, and it just seemed like a natural progression for him to go a little farther, to where he became dependent on it, to release the pressures of his day-to-day business life and risking his life as Iron Man. So that was pretty much the origin of that.
Were the editors at Marvel cool about the story? They didn't see it as a problem being too adult theme for a young teen book?
No. Jim Shooter, the head guy at the time, his entire qualification of what we could do as a qualifier was do it well, do a good story. And didn't put any limitations on it at all, just said do a good story. And so we got a great deal of freedom there, and it was very, very gratifying to have such confidence shown in us, we did our best to make it a memorable and entertaining storyline.
You guys also came up with Jim Rhodes, who was a very important character, now is another hero in War Machine, but your take was that it was an important supporting citizen that Tony can lean on. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, Tony needed a friend. That was one of the reasons he got into alcoholism. He kept everything inside. He didn't share. He needed a friend, and we created characters in that book as we went along as they were needed. That's how Mrs. Arbogast became... He needed a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Arbogast happened. He needed a head of security, so Vic Martinelli happened. He needed a pilot, someone he's not going to fly around as Iron Man. He's not going to, even though he can fly a plane or could. You know, how many executives do that on a regular basis? He needed a pilot. And, you know, he also needed a friend. And here we've got Rhodey, who was a tough guy in his own, a smart guy, tough guy, combat experience. Basically, on an equal level as Tony Stark, the human, on many areas. So and they became friends, and it was something that Tony really needed. And that was really his purpose under our reign as the creators on the book.
I'm looking forward to. I heard the news that you and Bob are coming back to Iron Man and doing. I'm glad Marvel is doing this. Certainly, the story truly never ends, and that's kind of the point of comic books. But they're allowing for these certain series that if there was a final ending, there's going to be one for Iron Man, the end, and it's you and Bob doing it?
Yeah. Yeah, papers haven't been signed, but agreements have been made. So, yeah, it looks like we're going to do a 48-page one-shot based on a pitch that we turned in about 5 years ago that there were some disagreements as far as some of the elements of the story. So we decided not to do it then, but apparently things have smoothed out. We're going to give it another shot.
I think that's really ambitious. Maybe in more secure hands, because you're the kind of guy that can deliver a one-shot, but almost unheard of in these days of six-issue story arcs and four-issue story arcs that a story can be told. So I think I'm looking forward to it. You've told me in a previous conversation that the second time around, Bob was more involved as a writer and was kind of feeling a little more secure as a writer. Is that a fair assessment? Did I get that right from what you told me?
Our second run on Iron Man.
Yeah.
Now, at the time, yes, Bob had become a writer between our first run and our second run. Our first run, he was an inker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we co-plotted, and it worked out very well. And the second time, Bob was had become a writer. He had more, I guess during the first run, he would acquiesce to me for the most part, because I was the writer. I was the person putting the plot together and writing the script. The second time, he had a stronger feeling about the story and the writing and so forth, because he had his own experience as a writer. So that's one of the reasons, one of many, why the second run was different from the first. Not
mm-hmm.
necessarily better or worse, but different. We were both, we were years older, had years more experience than for both of us.
Hope the papers get signed and hope it happens soon.
Well, they're talking about putting it out like in conjunction with the movie. So
sure.
2008, so that's probably when that will come out. So.
Okay.
Let's hope we all enjoy it.
Yeah, really. Any involvement on your own with the Iron Man movie?
No, none. They've not asked me.
Okay.
I did get an indirect invitation to do some DVD special features for the DVD, of the eventual DVD of the movie. Bob Leach did some of that. Through him, he asked me if I would be interested, and I declined. So, but that's it. My participation will probably be limited to spending $10 to see the movie.
Let's hope Favreau gets it right.
Oh, man. I do hope.
Yeah. What do you think of the comic book movies so far, of this current batch? And I'll put the starting point with Blade, because to me that really seemed to be the first one of this new generation of films.
I really liked the second one a lot.
Okay.
The first one was okay. It had a very interesting opening of the club. It was. Yeah, it was. The rest of it was just. It was okay, I thought. And then the second one I liked quite a bit. And I never really read a lot of the comics, so I can't say how close it was. But I liked. It worked really well, I thought. The second, third one was a little lighter tone, but I found it entertaining.
And the Spider-Man films and the X-Men films. What do you think of those?
Well, Spider-Man, I just delighted me to no end. I mean, my God, they did it right. What are the chances? I love the first one. A lot of people like the second one better. I didn't. I like the first one better, but I like the second one a lot. My main problem was that, like, 14 different people know he's Peter Parker after the second one.
Well, his subway car knows that he's Peter Parker after the second one.
Well, they know he's a guy. They know his face. They don't know his name. I don't think they got his wallet out. But yeah, I didn't like that. But I really liked both of those movies a lot. The X-Men movies I found very enjoyable, entertaining. Again, I never was an X-Men reader, but I liked the first one a lot and enjoyed the second and third ones both.
And I guess Fantastic Four, and how about the DC movies, Superman and Batman?
Oh, Batman Beyond was fabulous.
Yep.
I absolutely loved that.
Or Batman Begins, I guess.
What did I say?
Batman Beyond.
I'm sorry, Batman Begins. You're right, right, right. That one was fabulous. Batman Beyond was the animated one, which was interesting, too. Superman Returns was I thought was okay. I was impressed with Brendan Routh. I hadn't expected to like him, and I did. Wasn't that thrill with Kate Bosworth? She was playing.
Yeah, she seemed horribly miscast.
Yeah, she didn't seem to have the fire
that
Lois Lane should have. And Kevin Spacey was okay as Luther. I don't think they've gotten anyone. I mean, as much as I like Gene Hackman, I don't think they've gotten a really solid Luther yet. Maybe a white Michael Clark Duncan.
He was a good kingpin. Yeah, we didn't mention the Daredevil movie. What did you think of the Daredevil movie?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I didn't hate it. I was entertained. I didn't buy it on DVD, but it was okay.
Fantastic Four?
I really liked Jessica Alba in her underwear. My favorite part of the movie. Other than that, again, I found it entertaining. Nothing I'm going to run out and buy, but I was entertained while I was watching it.
Quick highlight of my conversation with David Michelinie. Glad that we touched on some of the movies. And glad that Jon Favreau proved to be a great movie maker when it comes to Iron Man. Now, if you're not aware of it, it just began. Bob Layton and Dave Michelinie have come back to Iron Man as promised. The trilogy is being completed of the Iron Man Doctor Doom story in the time of King Arthur. And the first issue is out. It is fantastic. I absolutely recommend you go out and check it out. Beautiful Bob Layton art, a wonderful script by Dave Michelinie. They haven't missed a beat. And the great thing is, it's a story that's being told in flashback. So you continuity hawks, just calm down. It's not going to interfere. There's no confusion. This takes place before the events of Secret Invasion. I suggest you check it out. It's a wonderful story that Marvel is telling right now. Writer Chuck Austin had a very controversial career in comic books. I never understood what the controversy was about. There were books of Chuck's I liked, some I didn't. One of the ones I liked in particular was his weekly Max series, which was one of the debut Max series that came out when the imprint first began. War Machine, and that's right, it was a weekly black and white series, something that the big two have flirted with on occasion, and Chuck was able to do it successfully twice with two 12-issue maxi series. It was a unique project. It caused Chuck to stretch both as an artist and writer, and I think it makes for an interesting story. And right now we present Chuck's conversation about that time writing War Machine. Now, this was in the early days of Word Balloon, so the sound quality isn't as good as I've gotten the show to be, so forgive some of the hiss in the conversation. But an interesting chunk of history from Chuck Austin.
Let's talk about Marvel. So you, around the time of King of the Hill, that's when the Marvel work started?
Yeah, what happened was I had been, every year you have what's called hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
For a television show, that means that you're not producing the show, basically. It's like forced vacation. You finish your 13 episodes or your 22 episodes or however many the network ordered, and then you basically take a break while they wait to see how it's doing and decide whether they're going to pick it up for the next season. So that can be anywhere from a couple of weeks to several months to the rest of your life, depending on the circumstances of the show. And in this case, King of the Hill was on hiatus. It's something they do every year about Christmas, maybe a little bit after sometimes. And for me, I was still just a storyboard guy. Hiatus came a little early because you're front-loaded onto the show. You do the front part of the show, and then when hiatus comes around, you're usually the first to get laid off. So
okay.
So I was on hiatus, and my wife had come to me and said, you know what, you really need to be creative on your own. You need to get away from doing work on other people's stuff. She said, I'm making enough money doing this other stuff. She's a television producer, and she does various different things. She's done movies for Disney Channel. She did Motocross, and she did Johnny Tsunami, and she did a series called Skate. She did another series called Power Rangers, which some people may have heard of.
Wow. Okay.
And so she's done quite a few things, and she's earned enough money that she said, you know, we can afford for you to take a couple months here and work on your own thing. And she said, why don't you take the next 2 weeks and work on doing your own comic book again? You know, she was talking about Strips, my adult comic that I'd done many years ago. Why don't you do that? We'll self-publish, and you can do your own thing, and you don't have to go back to King of the Hill, even if you make just a little bit of money. That's all we need. So I thought, cool. But at that point, I was getting burnt out on drawing. My arm was starting to hurt a bit, and I didn't realize why, but I was looking to do other things. So I started playing around with computers to do backgrounds and to save myself some time in the drawing, and started playing around with this technique that I would eventually use on Elektra. But in the process of playing around with it, I was doing, I built myself a little war machine and started having him do various different things and play around with lighting and effects and whatnot. And I wound up wasting the entire 2 weeks on war machine. I did, like, I don't know, 8 fake covers, and I did, like, almost an entire issue of a story about, you know, that wound up becoming U.S. War Machine number 1. And by the end of the 2 weeks, my wife was very angry that I had wasted that 2 weeks on a property that I didn't even own, that I couldn't even publish myself if it came down to it. And, you know, as a way of sort of placating her and making her feel better about it, I said, look, I'll send it to Marvel and I'll see if I can get them to bite on it, and at least then it won't have been wasted time. So I put together this package, I FedExed it to Joe, and he called me the next day.
Wow.
It was just one of those things where it was a regime change again, just like it was at Film Roman. So the secret, kids, is to wait for the regime change and slip yourself in under the door. But Joe had come in and he was looking for new projects and something unusual to sort of, you know, make his name. And I walked through the door with War Machine almost done on all the covers that they would need for any solicitation. And he said, yeah, look, I really want to do this, but I need a guy on Elektra. Can you draw other things besides War Machine? And I said, yeah. So I did some Elektra samples and wound up taking over this new project with Brian,
mm-hmm.
Brian Bendis, on the new Elektra, which was a lot of fun. I loved working with Brian. It was a great, great job.
That's cool.
But then they picked up War Machine, and, you know, my life was never the same.
Yeah, that's, you know, first of all, huge fan of War Machine. I it was really a great book. It came at the right time, as you say, with the regime change, you know, solicited as a Max book, and was this great, violent, sexy, fun, interesting, you know, take on S.H.I.E.L.D. And the other interesting thing, of course, about it was a weekly, and, you know, now DC is about to embark on 52, and the rigors of putting out a weekly book, and they've got 4 writers, Keith Giffen doing, you know, the breakdowns, 6 artists getting it done. How many people were working on War Machine?
Me.
Yeah. talk about working on a weekly book, man.
Yeah. Well, that's a little disingenuous because I did have some animation buddies in a small animation studio in Korea helping me out. So.
Okay.
But basically, I wrote every script. I did all the layouts. I did. I did all of the editing of the pages. I even had to redraw a bunch of pages when they finally came in myself. So there was a lot of work that went into that. And more importantly, we were producing it on a weekly schedule. Once you get into the cycle where, you know, you do the script, you do the layouts, you send it off, and you get this assembly line thing going on, after the initial 6 to 8 weeks of getting the whole thing started, the books come out on a regular weekly basis. And so we actually were turning it out on a weekly schedule and could have continued turning it out on a weekly schedule. And it had actually been picked up to turn it out on a weekly schedule to continue beyond issue 12 or mm-hmm. to start over again with number 1. But various different things got in the way of that, primarily me getting the X-Men job and Bill Gemmis falling in love with my writing. So that changed everything. But yeah, I'm sure they're having a real difficult time of it, but you know what? I have no pity for them.
Now, how fast of an artist were you when your arm was good?
Really fast. I mean, I was like, people used to, I don't know if many people remember Jack Davis now, but people used to kid me that I was sort of the contemporary Jack Davis because I was all about speed. I was all about getting it done as fast as I could. So I was always looking for shortcuts, always looking for ways to get it done quicker. And at sort of the height when I was doing War Machine and Elektra at the same time, I was turning out about 5 finished pages a day.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was really nuts. But I was working insane hours. I was at But now I understand how these manga guys say that that's what they're doing in Japan. But I was working, like, sometimes all night. In fact, when the first issue of War Machine came out, it was September 12th, 2001. So it was the day after September 11th.
Wow.
And I had been up all night on September 10th through to dawn on September 11th and not listening to the news or anything else and not having any idea what was going on, working on Elektra, actually, and finishing off some stuff on War Machine earlier in the evening. And so when I went in, literally I had been in bed for maybe 45 minutes when my wife came in and told me about the Twin Towers being hit. So I was just exhausted. When she told me, I didn't even understand. I thought she was talking about War Machine. She said, "We're at war." And I said, "I know, I feel that way. I'm sorry. I'm working too long." And she said, no, we're at war. Our country is at war." And it took me a while to sort of come out of it. But yeah, that's a sort of a very self-interested story around 9/11. But that's basically what was going on at the time. I was working long, long, exhausting hours.
So. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. Like I said, it was a great book. They offered you X-Men at that point, and you took that instead of War Machine. And it's so interesting because...
I don't mean to interrupt, but...
Please.
No, it was actually... They had picked up War Machine. I was on vacation in England, and I don't remember if I had written a couple of fill-in stories on X-Men or if I had already started working on X-Men at that point. But by the time I got back... I don't think I had started working on X-Men at that point, but when I came back, X-Men came very quickly after that, and then... Bill Gemmis decided he didn't want me working on lower-tier characters anymore, and he considered War Machine to be a lower-tier character. He wanted my writing on, you know, upper-tier, like X-Men and Avengers and whatever. So so basically, he killed War Machine because he felt that it was, at that point, beneath me, which it was unfortunate because I loved the project, and I could have worked on it forever. I had so many ideas, particularly with 9/11 having just happened.
Sure.
There were tons of story ideas that were coming to me that I wanted to do, and... It wound up getting scuttled primarily because Bill wanted me working on other things.
That's a shame, Chuck, because it was a great series, and I really think it did have potential to live beyond the two stories.
Thanks.
Some words with Chuck Austin about his great series War Machine. And that'll do it for this special flashback edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Back to our regular episodes next week. More flashbacks on the way as well. This is something that Newsarama really wanted to do and take a look back at some interesting points in past comic book history. Happy to oblige with highlights from great interviews that we've had in the past from Word Balloon and more interviews with some of the greats of the bronze, silver, and current age coming up. So keep listening for more of these flashbacks when the time permits. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.